Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Coronavirus Pandemic Has Put Stress on Family Life, by Caitlin Randall. A Midland family law attorney said his office has been very busy with divorce proceedings since the coronavirus pandemic began, and a family counselor said she's had an increase in people seeking marriage counseling. The couples who see Christy Edwards, a licensed counselor and executive director of Centers, don't necessarily have relationships that are falling apart, she said, but they are looking for help reconnecting with why they got married to begin with. We no longer have any breaks in our day that remind us of who we are as professionals or as a person, Edwards said. Forever, we have told people, when you walk in the door from work, you have to take off one hat and put on another. Those lines are blurred. Those working remotely during the pandemic may feel like they must be on for work all the time, and not separating work stress from their home lives, she said. And having a workstation at home, as many have set up since the pandemic began, may cause people to work more than usual, taking attention away from their spouses and families. Edwards recommended setting boundaries between work and home life by creating a schedule that would match the hours you'd normally spend in the office. She said waking up at the same time, having meals and taking breaks at the same time, and then stopping work at the same time and spending the remainder of the day with family will help create that boundary. Combating any feelings of depression or anxiety a person may be feeling at the individual level will also help their relationships, Edwards said. She recommended people eat healthy, exercise, and continue the hobbies they enjoyed before the pandemic. You have to eat healthy, you have to get exercise, you have to do the recreational kind of things that you enjoy, because that's the only thing that's going to give you the sense of normalcy you had prior to that, she said. Creating a space within your home where you can get a solitude and recharge for about 30 minutes a day will also help lessen the strain that constant time together can put on marriages, Edwards said. But taking these steps may not be enough for marriages that were in trouble before coronavirus. Edwards said that in cases where couples already felt as if they no longer enjoyed time together or had common interests, the pandemic will exacerbate those issues. Alan Moravsik, a family law attorney in Midland, said his office has been very busy with divorce proceedings since the start of the pandemic, and divorces have remained consistently high for the last 6 months. And it's not just divorces, it's child custody matters, he said. But despite an increase in family law cases, there hasn't been a noticeable backlog in moving those cases through the court system, Moravsik said. He said a smooth transition to hold hearings through online platforms has allowed family cases to continue forward. There are some exceptions, but I'd say 90% of the hearings are held on Zoom, he said. And the courts and attorneys appear to have made a real good adjustment in that regard, in learning the hardware and software. It's working out pretty good. This article is entitled, Planning and Zoning OKs Summit Petroleum's Office Development. Commissioners approved zone change to allow for office retail development with green space, by Mella McEwen. Summit Petroleum's plan for an office retail development at 3201 and 3108 Mockingbird Lane moved forward with approval of the zone change request at Monday's Planning and Zoning Commission meeting. Summit had requested a zone change from PD, Planned Development District, for a shopping center to RR, Regional Retail District, on two lots at North Midkiff Road and Mockingbird Lane, to offer added flexibility in the development process. Jeff Lang, Vice President, Land and Business Development with Summit, told the commissioners that the initial plan for the nearly 200,000 square foot site is an office building for the company's 24 Midland employees and includes a parking lot that will serve as a buffer between the development and the neighboring apartment complex.
Lang said plans are for at least 4 acres of green space, an amphitheater-type facility, and water features and shaded areas that will be open to the public. Retail, a coffee shop, perhaps a food court, and high-end retail stores of 2,000 to 3,500 square feet is also planned. An expected 75,000 square feet of retail buildings will be located in the south-central portion of the 17-acre site. Commissioners also unanimously approved a request for a specific use designation with term for the sale of all alcoholic beverages for on-premises consumption in a restaurant. Chuck and Patty's Restaurant, currently under construction at 5520 North Big Spring Street, is attached to a Jack's convenience store. Quattro FS LLC, which requested the designation, said Chuck and Patty's will be a 4,363-square-foot restaurant, including a 1,005-square-foot patio with an alcohol serviceable area of 3,261 square feet. Hours will be 10:30 a.m. to 10 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Sunday, with alcohol service from 11 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. Monday through Saturday and 11 a.m. to 8:30 p.m. Sunday. In other business, commissioners approved a request by Chad Walters for a zone change from PD, Planned District for Community Service Center, to SF2, Single Family Dwelling District, on a portion of 1301 Garden Lane, home of Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church. Chad Walters made the request so that it is consistent with the existing zoning of the property and to develop an addition to the existing building. Unanimously approved a proposed preliminary residential plat of the east 50 feet of lots 19 through 24 into one lot at East Pennsylvania Avenue and South Weatherford Street. Unanimously approved a proposed preliminary residential plat at 1304, 1306, and 1308 East Pecan Avenue to consolidate the three lots into one. This article is entitled Backing the Mayor. Council passes resolution supporting the City of Midland opening for business by Caitlin Randall. The Midland City Council on Tuesday passed a resolution in support of earlier comments by Mayor Patrick Peyton that the city is, quote, open for business, unquote. Peyton's remarks came during a press conference last week following an announcement by Governor Greg Abbott that restaurants and stores could open at 75% capacity, but bars must remain closed. The mayor said he would support businesses that opened beyond what Abbott had allowed, though they may face repercussions from state agencies. A resolution passed by the City Council Tuesday stated, "The City Council believes that businesses are socially responsible and are capable and willing to maintain effective health protocols to ensure that Midland continues to be successful during this public health threat, and the City Council finds it to be in the public interest to support Mayor Patrick Peyton's comments regarding Midland opening for business." In an interview following Tuesday's City Council meeting, Peyton said the resolution and the press conference last Thursday were to let Midland's businesses know the city is behind them. "We've had some great conversations among the council, them understanding that what we did Thursday didn't really carry any legal weight," he said. "It was just an opportunity for us as a community to say we're for our business community, and we wish Governor Abbott would let us manage our affairs outside of the larger umbrella of Texas, considering our hospital numbers are at 2%. Tuesday's resolution also does not carry any legal weight, according to Peyton, and is meant only as a show of support for business owners. Local governments are not able to override state mandates." Peyton acknowledged Thursday that stores and restaurants are risking being fined or closed by state agencies if they choose to open beyond 75% capacity, but he said the city would not close businesses that did so or take complaints from residents regarding businesses operating at a higher capacity. When asked if he would support bars that opened against Abbott's orders, Peyton said he would defend a bar owner's right to, quote, do whatever they think they need to do, unquote. He said he could not, however, protect a bar from having its license revoked by the state.
This article is entitled City: Midland Experiences Small Coronavirus Bump by Stuart Doreen. It appears there has been a Labor Day bump in the coronavirus numbers in Midland County. For the second straight Tuesday, the city of Midland has reported a week-over-week increase in coronavirus cases. According to the city and its health department, there were 26 cases reported Tuesday, for a two-day total of 63, which is higher than the 54 through 2 days last week and the 47 through Tuesday 2 weeks ago. Health officials expected an increase in cases after the Labor Day holiday, as there were increases inside Midland County after the Memorial Day and 4th of July holidays. There were 110 cases last week, a 31-case increase over the previous week. The Midland Health Department also reported 1,129 active cases inside Midland County, an increase of 7 compared to Monday, and 2,201 recovered, an increase of 21. The number of people who have died because of coronavirus-related issues remained at 81. The total number of Midland County residents who have tested positive for coronavirus is 3,614. Cases: Monday, 37, Tuesday, 26. Total this week, 63. Total through Tuesday last week, 54. Total through Tuesday 2 weeks ago, 47. Total during the pandemic, 3,614. This article is entitled MISD, 10 New Coronavirus Cases Reported in Last Week, from Staff Reports. 10 Midland ISD employees and students tested positive for coronavirus from September 15th to 18th, according to the district's website. 10 new cases include 4 from Lee High School, the most of any school during that 4-day period. Students or employees who attended both Midland High and the Advanced Technology Center accounted for 2. There have been 28 confirmed cases involving a student or employee this month, according to the district. None of those cases required the closure of a campus. The number of employees or students testing positive for coronavirus since June 22nd is up to 82, according to the district. The district reported last week that its tracking of coronavirus cases by campus also would include students who tested positive. The district in the past few weeks has started to bring students back on campus as part of its phase-in program for re-entry. Midland ISD has said that each notification triggers a series of steps, which include sanitizing and disinfecting, notifications of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at a public gathering, such as a board meeting or sporting event, we will also issue a press release. ECISD report. Ector County ISD reported Monday there were 13 new cases of coronavirus over the weekend. The students and employees who tested positive are at 9 schools, according to a press release.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Wednesday, September 23, 2020. Breakfast with the Lions Club. Families enjoy last year's Bunny Breakfast hosted by Midland Northside Lions Club. Bunny Breakfast was canceled because of coronavirus, but the club will be hosting We Serve Breakfast on October 3. Lions Club to host Fundraiser Breakfast. Midland Northside Lions Club will host a fundraiser, We Serve Breakfast, 7 to 10 a.m. October 3 at the Midland Park Mall Food Court. The menu includes sausage biscuits, scrambled eggs, potatoes, cookies, fruit, milk, orange juice, and coffee. Sponsoring restaurants are Texas Roadhouse, Charlie's Philly Steaks, Sidekicks and Legends, Fuddruckers, and Chick-fil-A. Breakfast can be takeout, curbside pickup, or dine-in. Participants must wear face masks and practice social distancing. Tickets are $6 each. They are available in advance from club members and at Abacus Computers, Claydesta Center, Dillard's Customer Service, Pristine Organic Cleaners, 1307 North Loop 250 West, and Liberty Tax Service, 1000 North Midkiff Road. Door prices include restaurant gift certificates, a round of golf for four at Green Tree Country Club, and ticket vouchers for entertainment events. Club member Mark Singe said, "We Serve Breakfast will be an annual event that will take the place of Bunny Breakfast, which was canceled this year because of the pandemic. We Serve is the Lions Club motto," he said. Odessa Arts awards $295,000 in cultural tourism grants. Odessa Arts will award $295,000 in cultural tourism grants to 15 arts agencies for events and initiatives in 2021, according to a press release. Cultural tourism grants are funded through hotel occupancy tax. Applicants must demonstrate cultural significance as well as direct impact on the hotel industry in Odessa, according to the release. The grant recipients are University of Texas, Permian Basin Fine Arts, $35,000, Ellen Noel Art Museum, $35,000, Odessa College Fine Arts, $35,000, Basin PBS, $30,000, Permian Playhouse, $30,000, West Texas Jazz Society, $20,000, Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale, $20,000, Casat in the Basin, $20,000, Midland Festival Ballet, $19,000, Permian Basin Opera, $10,000, Lisa Butler Fine Arts, $10,000, Marfa Public Radio, $10,000, West Texas Pride Center, $1,000. Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm said, "The organization is working on a grant program for local artists to receive funding for the creation of specific artworks." App can connect Alzheimer's walkers. The Permian Basin Walk to End Alzheimer's event is planned for October 10, but will look different because of COVID-19. Rather than walking in a large group, participants can walk wherever they want, said Julie Gray, Permian Basin Walk Manager, in a press release. Walkers will be able to connect through an app that will let them access information and resources from the Alzheimer's Association, participate in the local walk opening ceremony, follow a virtual walk path, track steps and distance, and manage Facebook fundraisers. The app can be downloaded now. To get links to Apple or Google downloads, go to act.alz.org/site. Today in history. Today's Wednesday, September 23, the 267th day of 2020. There are 99 days left in the year. Today's highlight in history. On September 23, 1952, Senator Richard M. Nixon, Republican, California, salvaged his vice presidential nomination by appearing on television from Los Angeles to refute allegations of improper campaign fundraising in what became known as the Checkers speech. On this date, in 1949, President Harry S. Truman announced there was evidence the Soviet Union had recently conducted a nuclear test explosion. The test had been carried out on August 29, 1949. In 1955, a jury in Sumner, Mississippi, acquitted two white men, Roy Bryant and J.W. Milam, of murdering black teenager Emmett Till. The two men later admitted to the crime in an interview with Look magazine. In 1987, Senator Joseph Biden, Democrat, Delaware, withdrew from the Democratic presidential race following questions about his use of borrowed quotations and the portrayal of his academic record. 10 years ago, the U.S. delegation walked out of a U.N. speech by Iranian President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad after he said some in the world had speculated that the U.S. staged the September 11, 2001 attacks in an attempt to assure Israel's survival.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled "GOP Deal on Court Vacancy Would Make Sense" by Jonah Goldberg, Tribune News Service. I'll confess, there was a time when I would have considered the question facing Republicans as a no-brainer. Of course they should seize this opportunity to replace the late Ruth Bader Ginsburg with a conservative. Moving the courts, especially the Supreme Court, rightward, has been a conservative lodestar for generations. It remains one of the last tenets of pre-Trump conservatism that still largely unites the right.
In fairness, the conservatives who take these matters seriously would say the issue isn't so much moving the courts rightward as it is restoring the courts to their proper role. We believe the primary reason these fights have become so ugly is that the judiciary has taken upon itself legislative functions it does not have. This is why even pro-choice conservatives and even pro-choice liberals like Ginsburg believe Roe v. Wade was deeply flawed. When Supreme Court justices do the job of politicians, it shouldn't be a surprise that confirmation battles resemble political campaigns. One of the benefits of this high-stakes moment is that many conservatives have shelved the old arguments about Senate precedents and hypocrisy and stated the matter clearly. In reality, there are only two rules, both set forth in the Constitution, writes National Review's Andrew McCarthy. A president, for as long as he or she is president, has the power to nominate a person to fill a Supreme Court seat, and that nominee can fill the seat only with the advice and consent of the Senate. That's it. Everything else is posturing. Everything else is politics. And is often the case, McCarthy is right. But this argument is also why I'm going wobbly. One of the reasons we are where we are is that then-Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid took this position when he invoked the nuclear option in 2013, i.e. lifted the filibuster for appellate judges. Mitch McConnell, the minority leader at the time, warned that doing so would invite a response in kind. In 2017, now Majority Leader McConnell was true to his word. He lifted the filibuster on Supreme Court nominees. In other words, what happens when both parties embrace the doctrine of do whatever you can get away with? Even before Justice Ginsburg's demise, Democratic support was building, not just for packing the Supreme Court by increasing the number of justices, which Ginsburg opposed, but also for Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico's statehood and the abolition of the legislative filibuster. Now Democrats are all but vowing to go through with expanding the court in response to a rushed replacement for Ginsburg. What will be the GOP's argument against such schemes? What some now dismiss as politics and posturing are actually important considerations that honor the conservative distinction between can and should, and fall under such antiquated notions as statesmanship, prudence, legitimacy, consistency, and precedent. These concepts put maintaining the long-term health of our institutions above the demands of the moment. Take Senator Lindsey Graham, who promised in 2016 that if an opening were to come in the last year of President Donald Trump's term, a nominee would not be considered until after the election. By going back on that promise in such spectacular fashion, Graham isn't merely debasing himself, he's also teaching people that nothing politicians say matters. Moreover, merely on the level of realpolitik, abandoning all considerations other than what you can get away with amounts to preemptive disarmament for the wars to come. The pernicious logic of apocalyptic politics works on the assumption that the long term doesn't matter. But the long term always becomes now, eventually. This is why the Senate could have used more posturing and politics, not less. Republicans have the ability to fill Ginsburg's seat before the election or immediately after in a lame duck session. That's a huge bargaining chip, given that the GOP Senate majority is so slim. It's a chip that could have been traded by even a handful of Republican senators. A few Republicans could have agreed to postpone the process until after the election in exchange for a few Democrats agreeing never to vote for a court-packing scheme, giving voters some buy-in for whatever happens next. If no Democrats agreed, then their issue is really with the system, and Republicans would have been free to vote for Trump's pick, even in a lame duck session. I'm using the past tense because on Tuesday morning, McConnell collected enough GOP votes to proceed with a fast-track process that will surely invite tit-for-tat reprisals down the road. I had high hopes such a deal could work. I was naive.
After all, such a bargain required politicians to trust other politicians to keep own part their word and stand up to the basis of their own parties for the long-term good of the country. I should have realized everyone is too out of practice with that sort of thing. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled Political Left Wants Regime Change by Rich Lowry, King Features Syndicate. Constitutional revolution is going mainstream. After delivering lectures about political norms for the entirety of the Trump era, often with good cause, much of the left is now threatening to kneecap an important institution of American government on a partisan vote in an act of ideological vengeance. If the Republican Senate confirmed a Trump appointee to fill Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg's Supreme Court seat right before or after the election, progressives say Democrats, if they sweep in November, should retaliate by packing the Supreme Court. This would do vastly more damage to the governing structure of the country than anything that President Donald Trump has said or done. But respectable center-left outlets like The New Yorker and Vox have run pieces advocating it, and Democratic leaders are making fraught all the options on the table statements. None of this comes out of the blue. The left is disenchanted with our country and especially its governing institutions, which it believes are shot through with racism and deeply undemocratic. Democrats have gone from assuming a few years ago that they have a permanent majority to assuming they can't possibly win under a rigged system. They no longer want to live under a government that checks majoritarian passions, recognizes the importance of states in our federal system, and features a Supreme Court that is supposed to render independent judgments based on the law and the Constitution. All of this, once a matter of basic civics, is now for suckers. Before its new fashion, court packing used to be notorious. The ill-considered move that FDR couldn't see through even at the height of his power. For good reason. To add a bunch of new seats to the Supreme Court, explicitly so a Democratic president could fill them, would radically diminish the court's standing. It would invite Republicans to counter with their own bout of court packing when they again returned to power. The court would become merely a partisan plaything and essentially an adjunct to the legislative branch. All that would stay the same about the institution would be the black robes. And for what? To compensate for a duly elected Republican Senate acting on its prerogatives to block one Supreme Court nominee, Obama nominee Merrick Garland, and potentially confirm another, Trump's nominee, to fill the RBG seat. The Senate itself is now an affront because small states get equal representation with large states. Never mind that this arrangement was at the center of the deal that gave us the Constitution. Never mind that the Constitution stipulates that this provision is unamendable. Never mind that prior to 2014, the Democrats controlled the Senate, and it didn't seem overly concerned about the body's alleged lack of legitimacy. The fact is that senators are chosen in Democratic elections in their respective states. And it's not a failing of our constitutional design that Democrats have made themselves so hateful to rural voters that they despair of reliably holding the Senate going forward. As a corrective, they are threatening to eliminate the filibuster to allow them to add Washington, D.C. and Puerto Rico as states to boost their number of senators, a maneuver that smacks of pre-Civil War era power politics. All of this is an awkward fit for Joe Biden's candidacy. We are told that Biden is an inoffensive institutionalist and committed moderate. But if Republicans defy his wishes on the RBG seat, he will respond by blessing outlandish changes to our system passed by narrow majorities. And by the way, Biden better win. Shahidi Hamid of The Atlantic wrote a piece expressing his worry that, quote, Trump will win re-election and Democrats and others on the left will be unwilling, even unable, to accept the result, unquote. He raises the possibility of, quote, mass unrest and political violence across American cities, unquote. Accepting the result of an election is a pretty important norm. Unless you've convinced yourself you live under a hideously undemocratic regime with no legitimacy. This column is entitled, Party of McConnell Stands for Nothing. David Von Drell, Washington Post. The path to my fixed purpose is laid with iron rails, whereon my soul is grooved to run, declared the self-destructive Captain Ahab concerning his pursuit of Moby Dick. The elusive white whale of Republican politics is abortion rights. For nearly 50 years, over oceans of campaign speeches and seas of television ads, GOP candidates have promised to fill the Supreme Court with enough harpooners to slay the beast. With the chance to replace the late Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a pioneer of women's rights, mere weeks before a presidential election, the Republican Ahabs are lowering boats and putting their backs into one more try. 4 years ago, they used their Senate majority to preserve a 5-4 conservative advantage on the court by blocking President Obama's pick in the final year of his second term. Now they spy the chance to grab a 6-3 margin. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, Republican Kentucky, might want to flip ahead to the final chapter to see how this story ends. Or I could just tell him, Ahab is last being seen dragged by the whale into the fatal briny. One of three things could come of this. Cooler heads might prevail. But what's that choice of that these days? What's the chance of that these days? The other two alternatives both bristle with disaster for the GOP. The GOP might actually spear its whale by creating a majority of justices willing to undo the reproductive autonomy that has been affirmed and reaffirmed in earlier court opinions. The number of new supporters this would win for the Republican Party is approximately zero. They already have, as their rock-solid base, all the voters who genuinely believe that human life begins at conception, not as a scientific proposition, obviously true, but as a moral law, that the single zygote cell formed when a microscopic sperm cell fertilizes an ovum is as much a person as you or me. As a former zygote myself, I understand the principle. I also understand that an entity composed of many trillions of cells is relevant to these matters. Overturning Roe v. Wade, as the campaign shorthand goes, would compromise the rights of every woman with a zygote in her body. By the same life-at-conception logic, a number of contraceptive methods could potentially be banned, including IUDs and the so-called morning-after pill. Never in the U.S. history has there been a comparable rollback of officially recognized rights. While gaining zero voters, the GOP stands to lose millions of them. Generations of women and the men who love them have factored reproductive freedoms into their worldviews. A qualified right to abortion is recognized even in Italy, home to the anti-abortion Roman Catholic Church. Among those who would lose autonomy are many women and their men who have loyally voted Republican year after year while quietly depending on these rights. Democrats aren't the only ones who experience unwanted pregnancies. The third alternative fits the cynical spirit of McConnell's power play. Elected Republicans could grab the seat to the delight of their anti-abortion base while quietly counting on the justices not to do anything radically unpopular. A fact you won't find in Republican campaign ads is that all federal protection of abortion rights are the products of Republican-dominated courts. The last time the Supreme Court had a majority appointed by Democratic presidents was 1969. When Roe v. Wade was decided in 1973, 6 of the court's 9 justices were appointed by Republican presidents. 5 of the 6 were in favor. In 1992, the court explicitly reconsidered whether a qualified right to abortion exists. By then, 8 of the 9 justices were Republican appointees. How does the GOP keep its grip on the abortion issue despite this history? by denouncing those justices as the wrong kind of Republicans and pledging to find more reliable ones. Over time, the party has replaced the supposedly squishy justices with rock-ribbed conservatives approved by Federalist Society gatekeepers. If six such stalwarts should fail to deliver the long-term promised repeal, it will be obvious that abortion rights are here to stay, and Republican rhetoric to the contrary is baloney. The GOP cover would then be entirely bare. The party of fiscal discipline has become the party of trillion-dollar deficits. The party of free trade has become the party of Trump tariffs. The party of limited government has become the party of executive orders. The party of Reagan has become the party of resentment. When the hollowness of its anti-abortion rhetoric is confirmed, the Republican Party will stand for nothing. On a platform, they don't even bother to write. There's an old saying, when you stand for nothing, you'll fall for anything. A suitable epitaph for the party of McConnell in the age of Trump. This is the local page. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, September 23rd. Luann Parks Rogers. Luann Parks Rogers passed away on Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. She was born in Sherman, Texas on June 18th, 1939 to Bernice and Clarence Parks. Luann is survived by her husband of 56 years, Glenn Rogers, sons David G. Rogers and fiancée Michelle Green of Midland, Robert L. Rogers and wife Elizabeth of Dallas, brother Robert Parks of New York, grandchildren Jad Rogers, L. Rogers, Allie Rogers, Emma Rogers, and Kyle Konarski. The family would like to thank Hospice of Midland as well as her caregivers Rosalba Zuniga, Lucy Gutierrez, Berenice Ortiz, and Michelle Urias for the care and compassion extended to Luann. A celebration of life service will be held Saturday, September 26th at 1:30 p.m. at First Presbyterian Church, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland. Memorials may be directed to First Presbyterian Church of Midland, Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas, Midland, Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri, Midland, Midland Memorial Foundation, 400 Rosalind Redford Grover Parkway, Midland, Midland Community Theater, 2000 West Wadley, Midland, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Robert Allen Chatwell. Robert Allen Chatwell of Midland, Texas, age 68, passed away suddenly at his home Friday night, September 18th, 2020. Cause of death was of natural causes. He was the son of Charles Robert and Joyce Marie Chatwell, both of Big Spring, Texas. He is survived by his wife, Juana Marque Chatwell of Midland, Texas, two sons, Gregory Allen Chatwell of Midland, his wife, Brandy, and three children, Gage, Ashlyn, and Gavin, Brian Chatwell of Cibolo, Texas, his wife, Stacy, and two children, Carson and Madison, two stepdaughters, Shayla Baker of Midland and wife, Cindy, Shaylin Arlett, also of Midland, her husband, James, and two sons, Jaden and Taylor, his sister, Deborah Choate of San Angelo, her husband, Jimmy, and son, Charles Thomas Choate of Harlingen, and his wife, Karen, and two children, Kylie Choate of San Antonio and Jimmy Ryan Choate of San Angelo. Robert is preceded in death by his parents, Charles Robert and Joyce Marie Chatwell, his first wife, Betty Chatwell, deceased of cancer, infant son, Eric, and his sister, Joyce Charlene Parkhill of Big Spring, Texas. Services will be held at Greenwood Baptist Church at 1:30 p.m. on Thursday, September 24th. The viewing will be held at Ella's Funeral Home in the Ellis Room on Wednesday, September 23rd from 6 to 8 p.m. Graveside is scheduled at 3 p.m. at Rest Haven Memorial Park in Midland. Skipper L. Burns. Skipper L. Burns, surrounded by his loving family, left to be with our Lord and Savior on September 8, 2020, at the age of 74.
Skipper was born in Medill, Oklahoma on November 13, 1946 to Bill Jr. and Jimmy Burns. In addition to his wife, Cheryl, Skipper is survived by his two sons, Johnny and wife Shannon of Kemper, Texas, Stephen and wife Dana of Lampasas, Texas, 10 grandchildren, John, Tyler, and wife Jordan, Dylan, Chance, Autumn, Landon, Brooke, Joe, Patricia, and Katie. Per Skipper's wishes, there will be a gravesite service with his family on September 26th at Lovington Cemetery through Smith Rogers Funeral Home, Lovington, New Mexico. Sue King Miller Townsend. Sue King Miller Townsend, age 86, of Abilene, Texas, formerly of Midland, passed away September 17, 2020. She was born at Courtney, Martin County, Texas, on April 21, 1934, to John Stevenson King and Ethel Harris King. She is survived by her daughter-in-law, Donna Miller of Abilene, granddaughter Shannon Ganaway and husband David of Abilene, great-grandson Carter Ganaway of Abilene, two nieces, two nephews, and several great-nephews. She is preceded in death by Don Miller, B.E. Red Townsend, her parents, her stepfather Lee May, daughter Carol K. Miller, son Steve Miller, and three sisters, May Jean King, Sylvia King Green, and Mary King Miles. Services will be held in Midland, Texas, with visitation at Ella's Funeral Home on Wednesday, September 23rd from 5 to 7 p.m., and a graveside service only at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Thursday, September 24th at 1 p.m., officiated by Tim Ball. In lieu of flowers, donations can be made to the American Cancer Society, Turning Point Ministries, or the charity of your choice. Terry Lee Bailey. Terry Lee Bailey, 68, of Midland, Texas, was called home on September 18, 2020, after complications due to cancer, and passed into eternal life at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was born in Midland, Texas, on September 14, 1952, a beloved son of the late Joe and Thelma Black Bailey. Terry leaves his beloved wife and soulmate of 40 years, Kathy Campbell Bailey. They were married February 14, 1980. He also leaves his five children, sons Rick McNew of Colorado Springs, Chris and wife Aline of Rayford, North Carolina, Sam, Josh, and husband Casey Griffin of Amarillo, and Isaac and his wife Roxanna, brother Steve and his wife Shelley of Milburn, Oklahoma, sister Luella Bailey Mansell and her husband Terry John, grandchildren Bryce, Sophia, Ethan, Kylie, Evie, Megan, and Angelo, and his many nieces, nephews, cousins, numerous friends, and extended members of the Bailey and Campbell families. In addition to his parents, he was predeceased by his dear brothers, Otha, Joe, and Larry, and his dear sister, Barbara Bailey, and her husband, Roland Spud Blocker. Visitation will be at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home on Wednesday, September 23rd, from 6 to 8 p.m. Funeral service will be conducted at Kelview Heights Baptist Church on Thursday, September 24th, with services beginning at 10 a.m. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Tommy A. Reap. Tommy A. Reap, a.k.a. Tom, was born on December 26, 1944, to James L. Reap and Johnny Crowley in Midland, Texas. Tom was one of three children, a brother, James L. Reap, and a sister, Linda Sue Reap, who passed away at an early age. Tom met Roberta in 2005 while working together at Turf Specialties. They later married on February 14, 2009, and were until his death on September 14th. Tom was preceded in death by a son, John Reap, his father, James L. Reap, mother, Johnny Crowley, and sister, Linda Sue Reap. Survivors to mourn his death are his wife, Roberta Reap, her son, Terrence Parker, Brittany, three grandchildren, Imani, Terrence, and Isaiah Parker, a brother, James L. Reap, Jr., and a nephew, Travis, whom he spoke of highly. Tom leaves behind a host of family and friends to mourn his memories. The memorial service will be Saturday, September 26th at 11 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home, 2508 North Big Spring Street, Midland. Memorial service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts.online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapipkinfh.com. Death notices. Mary Borrego. Mary Borrego, 72, of Midland, passed away September 21st, 2020. The viewing will be held from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with rosary to be recited at 7 p.m., Thursday, September 24th, at the branch at NPW in Midland. Funeral Mass will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, September 25th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church, with interment following at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Matilde Lujan. Matilde Lujan, 89, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, September 19th. Viewing will be Tuesday, September 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 9 p.m., with a rosary starting at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass is set for 10 a.m. on Wednesday, September 23rd, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will be at Rest Haven Memorial Park. He is survived by his wife, Manuela Lujan, three daughters, Florencia Leiva, Ana Bella Lujan, and Maria Guadalupe Gonzalez, and one brother.
This is Connie reading the Odessa American for Wednesday, September 23rd, 2020. Top story is Counties 2020-21 Budget Okayed. Rodriguez Opposes Higher Tax Rate by OA News at oaoa.com. Ector County Commissioners on Tuesday adopted the county's budget for the new fiscal year starting October 1st with an overall $3 million increase in spending and an ad valorem tax hike from 36.5 cents per $100 in valuations to 36.9. Precinct 4 Commissioner Arnold Rodriguez voted no on the tax rate, saying it should be left unchanged. The schedule of 2020-21 expenditures was approved on a 4-1 vote with Commissioners Eddie Shelton from Precinct 1, Greg Simmons from Precinct 2, and Dale Childers from Precinct 3 voting yes, along with Judge Debbie Hayes. Helped considerably by the 1.25 cent sales tax enacted by the voters in November 2 years ago, the new budget is for $64,887,521 in general fund expenditures and $20,051,588 from the sales tax fund, which is used to bolster law enforcement, maintained and rebuild roads, and curb illegal dumping. The total is $84,943,109. The current year budget is for $81,849,488 with $67,143,225 in the general fund and $14,706,263 in the sales tax fund. In other business, the court proclaimed October 4th through the 10th National 4-H Club Week after hearing Club President Roxy Hernandez and Vice President Kayla Shurum say the state and county-sponsored youth organizations' multitudinous opportunities had greatly boosted their confidence and increased their capabilities. Accompanied by Texas A&M Extension Service Family and Community Health Agent Abigail Pritchard of Odessa, Ector County Agent Steve Poss said the 4-H's represent the development of the head, heart, hands, and health of members from ages 8 to 19. The court also tabled its consideration of a letter of intent from the Airport Advisory Board concerning proposed improvements at Schlemmer's Field while more detailed information is developed for its regular October 13th meeting. Approved seeking a credit rating from the Standard & Poor's Company for the $26 million insurance of certifications of obligations to build a new juvenile detention center and possibly other purposes. Okayed a contract with the Permian Basin Community Centers doing business as Prima Care to bolster the work of deputies certified to deal with mentally disturbed inmates at the county jail. Approved Sheriff's Mike Griffith's plan to apply to the Texas Department of Transportation for a Click It or Ticket program grant to encourage the use of seatbelts in motor vehicles. Approved its 2020-21 maintenance grant contract with the Texas Attorney General's Office. Renewed its contract with the Area Agency on Aging. Approved interlocal governmental agreements for the vehicle fleet's maintenance among the Vector Fleet Management Company, the Medical Center Health System, UTPB, and the county. Okayed leasing a mail machine for the county's mailroom. Approved Health Department Director Brandy Garcia's request for a 36-month contract with the eClinical Works Company to provide electronic medical records. Approved request from County Attorney Dusty Gullivan and Medical Examiner Chuck Moab to hire investigators. Okayed Human Resource Director Patricia Payton's proposal to spend $220 for professional fees and dues, $400 for office supplies, and $1,700 for furniture and equipment. allocated $50,000 for contract services and monitoring fees for post-sentence monitoring. Tending to the needs. The caption reads, Buddy West Elementary School nurse Joanna Muniz was named Nurse of the Year for ECISD. Muniz worked as an obstetric gynecology nurse for 3 years before working for ECISD, where she has been a nurse for the past 10 years. Nurse of the Year Loves Caring for Kids by Ruth Campbell. After a decade of serving as a school nurse at Buddy West Elementary School, Joanna Muniz has been named Nurse of the Year for Ector County ISD. I was very humbled about it, very surprised, said Muniz, who had been an obstetrics gynecology nurse for almost 3 years before changing tracks. I work with a great group of nurses that do just the same as me, if not more, so I was very honored to be selected, but most of all humbled, just to be nominated. Principal Giselda Davila has worked with Muniz for a little more than 3 years. During those 3 years, she has shown true leadership in our school. She is attentive to not only the physical needs of our students, but also the mental and psychological needs. She truly cares about our students, and she gets involved in programs, after-school events, and participates in decision-making situations. She takes the time to get to know our students. She has great communication with our teachers and parents. She is caring and compassionate. I know that she is also a leader to other nurses in the district. She is efficient and does not hesitate to help around the school when needed. She has been amazing during this pandemic time. She is very knowledgeable and has taken upon herself to do her own research to better help and serve our community. This award was way overdue, Davila said in an email. Muniz earned her registered nurse degree from Odessa College. Even when I was in nursing school, I always wanted to do pediatrics, so that was always my passion. In the hospital setting, I always felt like they were scared of us because we were always coming in to do treatments and poking them and things like that. When I came across this, I just had kids of my own. I was like, this is pediatric setting where I'm not poking and prodding, and hopefully they won't be as scared of me. So it brought me back to pediatrics, Muniz said. She added that being a school nurse is different than people might think. It's so much more detailed and being involved with these kiddos and their families than you would expect, Muniz said. You get to do more than nursing. Sometimes they just need a friend. Sometimes they just need a shoulder to lean on. Sometimes they just need a break from class and just a few minutes to kind of recharge. So you get to more than just nursing, she added. What she enjoys most is seeing the students' smiling faces and getting a hug or a high five. It's especially heartening when she's having a bad day. Sometimes you walk into a classroom and their little faces just light up like, oh, we know who she is. Like I said before, it just makes you feel loved, makes you feel needed, and that's a good thing, Muniz said. Munis works full-time at West Elementary and is starting her fourth year. She had worked at other schools previously. The native Odessaan said, "Midland School is interesting because the students keep you on your toes. You never know what to expect, but in elementary, I feel more like I'm needed, like I'm loved. Sometimes that's all the kids want is to come by and say hi or to give me a hug or tell me how their day was. So I think it's just a different atmosphere here," Munis said. With the pandemic, there are fewer students coming to see her. The guidelines to send students home are a bit more stringent, and when they can return is stricter as well. They have to have a doctor's note and be completely clear of symptoms. This year is very different with all the COVID-19 restrictions. Normally, she would see 40 to 50 students a day and 60 to 70 during the flu season. As you can see, we're having to wear a face mask, and when there's a kiddo in here, we have to wear the face shields. The teachers are calling me and letting me know there's a kid coming, or I'll go get them. They can't just come to me on their own like they used to. Now they're having to be chaperoned, Munis said. Other than that, things aren't that different. She does have to disinfect her office and herself, though. Parents call her to ask for guidance on where they should go or what they should do. I haven't done virtual appointments, but we have little apps that we use, kind of our school social media, and they contact me through that. Also, ECISD in general has telepsychiatry where they can do psychiatric visits virtually, and we're about to start that. We have an awesome counselor on campus, so she deals more with that. Her goal is to continue to be a role model for the newer nurses coming on board. I help mentor a lot of them just because I've been here for so long and I've been at so many campuses, but just to help them have the passion that I do. Is it a perfect job? Is it a perfect scenario right now? No. But I love what I do, and I love coming to work every day, and I just hope I can instill that in the new nurses, Munis said. Together, Munis and her husband Ramon have three children.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.